This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today, all the way from Texas, we're joined by today's guest, Mr. Hunter Thompson. What's up, dude?
Not much, just happy to be here.
Wasn't there like a crazy writer named Hunter S. Thompson?
Yep, I haven't read any of his stuff, but I've heard that a lot over my life. Yeah. So no relation, not named after, just a coincidence.
Yeah. And that dude has the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas about him. Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen it. No, okay. I haven't dove into anything.
Are you a alcoholic drug user by chance?
Nope. Okay. do my best to not do any of those things too
okay.
much.
Okay, good. Hey, move that microphone just a little bit away from your mouth. There you go. That's better. Up a little bit now. There we go. Cool.
There we go.
All right. Today, we're going to talk about Texas. I want to talk a little bit about one of the unique, you have a little bit of a unique story about where you can hunt and how you can hunt. But before we get into that, I want to know what you do for a living.
So I work in environmental restoration. My job is specializing in wetland restoration. So anytime a company is making an impact, putting in a neighborhood, putting in a pipeline, if they're going to impact a certain acreage of wetland, it's my job to put it back somewhere else. That's what they contract us for.
Gotcha. All right. So I'm thinking of the movie or the show Landman. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Billy Bob Thornton takes his crew out. They drill for oil and it's in the middle of a swamp or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to impact somebody. The state of Texas tells Billy Bob Thornton, hey, dude, you got to go now make another wetland somewhere else if you're going to destroy this one type of deal.
Yeah, pretty similar. It's all federal law. Texas doesn't care too bad. There's some environmental quality laws here in Texas, but it's all mostly federal. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. That's interesting, man. So basically you go out. Where do you live?
I live just northwest of Houston, but I operate in the greater Houston area, a little bit of North Texas, a little bit of Louisiana also.
Okay. All right. So that's interesting. Wetland rehabilitation? Is that what you said? Or restoration?
Restoration. The replacing what was lost is called mitigation.
Okay. All right. So walk me through how this works. I'm interested in this.
Yeah. So, everyone's got all these neighborhoods popping up around them these days. If they're going to impact a certain habitat type or acreage of wetland, say forested wetland, they need to have a consultant, which I've also done in the past, environmental consultant, come out and delineate, which means draw a line on. It's a fancy word for go survey or map where these wetlands are. They need to assess them. So prove how high of quality they are, and that shows what they're going to impact. It's not just 100 acres, go replace 100 acres themselves. You actually assess the quality of it, and that gives you a certain amount of wetland units that you have to replace somewhere else. So if someone's impacting 100 acres of really low quality, then we could put it back with 20 acres of high quality somewhere else.
And gotcha.
It's replacing that lost function, that lost quality. Yeah. Gotcha. So, and it also goes into, there's certain distinctions of what is jurisdictional wetlands, meaning they think this is going to impact stuff further downstream because water all flows downhill. So you're not just affecting yourself, you're affecting people downstream of you. Versus stuff that's non-jurisdictional, they don't think it's going to affect anything else. So it's isolated and it may not require that mitigation.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, it sounds like, are you outside a lot?
Yeah, I'm getting more and more office stuff, getting higher up, but I still spend a lot of time outside in the swamp with the mosquitoes.
Oh, love it. That's awesome, dude. I'm sure that mosquitoes suck, but, you know, cubicles suck too, dude. So, you know, it's a balancing act, I bet.
Exactly. Every time I'm in the office, I want to be outside. Every time I'm outside, I want to be in the office.
Love it. Okay. So here's what we're going to do today. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, we're going to say thank you to the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. If you are looking for a badass, and I mean truly badass broadhead, most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. I'm a huge fan of the three-blade jackhammer. I have killed a lot of deer and animals with that head. The Boss four-blade, I've killed some animals with that before as well. Just a badass broadhead, very sturdily made from great materials. Go check out wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Vortex Optics. We are past turkey season now, and we're starting to get into drive around out in the country and look at velvet deer time of year. And you do that with spotting scopes, really high quality binoculars. They have red dots rifle scopes. They have range finders. They got everything you need as far as optics and optics accessories are concerned. So go check out vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Code Blue Sense. We've been talking a lot about Code Blue Sense on the How to Hunt Deer podcast and the impact that our mock scrapes have had in recent years. So go check out all of their real and synthetic deer urines, their scent elimination products, their rope-a-dope mock scrape kit, and how we use that. CodeBlueSense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then last but not least, Reveal Trail Cameras. It's time. Dude, I just set a Reveal Trail Camera on my back deck last night, or it was a couple nights ago, but it took a couple nights for this raccoon to show up, and it's been eating out of our hummingbird feeder, and it's been pulling. So not only is it good at the whole locating deer, but it's also really good at security on the hummingbird feeders, because now I got to get rid of a raccoon and I'm going to try to have fun with it. And so whether I'm going to do a live deal and try to catch it alive, or if I'm going to try to put a conibear on my deck somehow and just trap that son of a gun, we'll see. And so other than that, we're going to have fun with it. Anyway, Reveal Trail Cameras can be found at tacticam.com/cameras. And they also have had several upgrades to the app. So if you haven't updated your app, or go check out the functionality of the app, you can find that wherever apps are downloaded. So, and then of course my company, Full Sneak Gear, if you want a t-shirt with a deer on it. All right. I see the Texas A&M sign behind you. Okay. I have a question. Is that where you graduated from?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure did.
Is Johnny Manziel, despite his run-ins with the law and drugs and like could have been a really good NFL quarterback to kind of blowing it, is he still like the king of Texas A&M?
I wouldn't say he's the king, but everyone still knows him. You know, he's shrouded in controversy, so you're going to find the people who dislike him, who dismiss him. Him and I started at A&M the same time, so we shared a freshman year, shared a sophomore year before he left. So, like, he's still kind of my quarterback from when I was there.
Okay.
But I know he's kind of a weird guy.
Okay. All right. Well, so have you seen the documentary about him?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so there's a documentary about him, and then how he's like, this was before NIL deals, so like he was signing a lot of autographs for a ton of money, and so, but just like being a freshman, winning the Heisman Trophy, and then just dominating, especially like, let me ask you the question: were you at the Texas A&M Alabama game?
No, man. So my whole family went to A&M. My mom, my uncles, my cousins, my grandfather started at A&M in like 1939, got drafted for World War II, And then whenever World War II was finished, he came back and finished. So that game was the day of my grandfather's funeral,
Oh boy.
and we got like the whole funeral. We're like checking the score and like as a family, like talking to each other, like, okay, we're up, oh, we're down, oh, we're this, and we get back for like the last 5 minutes to see the final touchdown on the TV,
Yeah.
and like we all just like, whoa, just it
Yeah.
was amazing. And we're like, oh, granddad helped him get it over the fin or
It,
get it over the touchdown line. So yeah, we
yeah.
were all
That's
just
awesome,
hyped.
dude. That's like something you're always going to remember, too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
That's awesome. That's cool, man. All right. So, speaking of family, do you come from an outdoors family who's always been like the hunting and outdoors type?
I killed my first deer when I was 5 years old, on a lease in South Texas, and we used to be down there every weekend. Did lots of hunting. Be in Texas, it was mostly rifle hunting over corn.
Yeah.
I eventually got into bow hunting as an adult. I was trying to get into it more younger, but we were just prioritizing just getting deer on the ground back in the day. So
Yeah.
even though I had a bow younger, I didn't really get into the actual hunting until I was an adult.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about how this hunting league, because I've talked with several people from Texas over the years, but talk to me a little bit about how the Texas lease thing works. It sounds like you were hunting with your family on leases, as you're growing up. But how does that work for long periods of time? Do you just keep paying the lease and bringing more people in? 'Cause like, for example, if, your brother's born, then that's another kid that's going to be on there. And then maybe a cousin or a nephew or something like that all comes on. How do you balance that?
Yeah, there's different levels of it, and every landowner is different. So when we started out, when I was younger, I shot a lot of does and spikes, and it was more of a agreement thing. We'd pay a little bit of money, but we helped build stuff on the property, and that kind of covered some lease fees.
Yeah.
Later on, my grandfather, it was really important that he got to be with us to all shoot a trophy buck, as he put it, which was just any, nice 10 point or 8 point. And he set up a lease where he got 3 bucks and 6 does a year. He had 9 grandkids, so he just for 3 years he paid for that amount of deer on a property, and we cycled through like, all right, this year these three grandkids will get a buck, and then the next year these three grandkids will get a buck, and then the others would just shoot does. So yeah, you're generally paying for property access and a certain amount of deer or a certain amount of guns,
Yeah.
hunters, but they say per gun on the property.
So was that a high fence operation? Like, was that all high fences or?
Some has been high fence, some hasn't. All the high fence I've ever hunt has been like pretty decent acreage to where like the deer don't really know they're high fenced. And also, it was back in the day before all of this like super hypertrophy management where the deer were just super conditioned to show up to a feeder every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So your grandpa pays for 3 bucks and 6 does. And was that lease just for the grandkids then? Summer is officially here. And you know what that means? Long late nights by the grill, weekends at the lake, and hitting the golf course with your buddies. And nothing elevates those perfect summer moments quite like a premium cigar. Whether you're pairing a rich Murado with a cold bourbon after a backyard barbecue or enjoying a smooth smoke on the porch at sunset, Thompson Cigar has you covered. They've been America's humidor since 1915, offering the absolute best selection and prices. Because they have one of the largest humidors in the country, your cigars are guaranteed fresh and delivered straight to your door. If you want to try something new, check out their unique 5-pack fever deals or their value clubs for unbeatable savings and expert curation. Use my code NFC at checkout for up to 20% off your orders of $75 or more. Or visit thompsoncigar.com/NFC and the discount will be automatically applied. Some exclusions may apply.
Yeah, I mean, the adults were there, they were supervising. They would shoot pigs every now and then. I don't know the details of that, but I think we've got so many pigs down here that landowners just don't care. Well, like once people are on the property, go have fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's crazy though, that your grandpa secured a lease just for kids, just for the grandkids.
Yep. No, and so then super important to him.
That's awesome. So then was there another lease for him and the uncles and your dad and things, or did he not hunt?
He didn't hunt. He just wanted to take us out there and he wanted to be with us to shoot a trophy buck before he passed. Yeah, that was just something that he got on his heart and was important to him.
Interesting. So did he hunt at all back in the day?
He did. He had a couple mounts of like smaller deer, and he was more into duck hunting whenever he was younger.
Okay.
So lots of stories of my uncles going duck hunting with him. But yeah, he just, as he was getting up there in age, he wanted every grandkid to have a trophy buck.
Interesting. Man, I've never heard like the you know, I've always heard the grandpa's, you know, the grandpa would still hunt, but I guess down there, if you're limited to what you can and cannot shoot based off of, you know, like a handshake agreement or a lease agreement, I can see where that would be, would happen. But what about your dad? Like, did your dad have another lease that he would go to and hunt?
No, my dad had that first lease that I shot my first deer on, did a lot of, again, spikes and does whenever I was little.
Yeah.
But he spent a lot of time prioritizing us hunting, and he also cared way more about meat. So like he'd definitely shoot some does and spikes along with us. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of times where I'd fall asleep when I'm real little at the bottom of the blind, and I wake up and there's a dead doe there, and he's like, "Hey buddy, look at that doe you shot." And I'm like, "Sure. If you say so, Dad."
I blacked out.
Yeah, like I don't remember this at all, but cool. Why not? Meat on the ground, I guess. I mean, and he still had it, it was all legal. It was just trying to like get us hyped about it and you know, give us the credit kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. Nice. So a lot of priority to the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was super fortunate that, they were indoctrinating me into wanting to go kill stuff.
That's awesome.
From an early age.
Yeah, that's cool. So how did that kind of expand as you got older? Mm-hmm. Did you have to go find your own lease, or did your grandpa take care of it your entire childhood?
Yeah, grandparents and dad took care of everything throughout my childhood. Once I got into college and now as an adult, I've had to find friends, places that would let me hunt for free. Also, currently, the way I primarily hunt on private land is one of the benefits of my job is employees get to hunt on a lot of company properties. So for these restoration projects, one, hogs are super terrible for everything we do. They tear everything up. So we're trying to keep those populations under control to an extent. And then planting young trees, deer will come and like eat the tops of them off. And so you just end up with these short stunted bushes instead of real trees when we're trying to put forests back.
Yeah.
So we spend a lot of time trying to control and limit our deer populations on our properties. And so it's just a great benefit that I get to go hunt deer a lot on most of our properties down here.
I'll tell you this, my dad is in the process of turning 80 acres of Iowa ag ground into like native prairie grass, like that, what would have been found here 100 years ago, or, you know, not even that, like more than that, like 200 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he's doing some kind of restoration, program. He cut the property in half and he's done one side of the property already. And now, after this year's crop is out on the other 40 roughly, he's going to restore the other half of the property. So there's going to be no ag on that 80 acres. And this is in like north central Iowa ag country. Yeah. And it's crazy how much The pheasants have come back. The songbirds have come back. Turkey nesting in this mm-hmm. area. Also, he does have an issue with the trees that he has planted along the waterway mm-hmm. are getting destroyed by deer,
yep.
whether that's eating them or rubbing on them and breaking them and things like that. So he's had to you need to get out here and shoot these things so I don't, you know, like to get them away. And I'm like, no, we got to wait for the big buck to show up and then I'll come yeah. and shoot him, you know, like all that shit. So, plus a lot of the deer come through nocturnal, mm-hmm. but it's crazy that you, it's like I get health or my wife gets health insurance from her company mm-hmm. for our family.
Yeah.
And that's a benefit. But mm-hmm. one of the benefits you get from your company is hunting permission.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a determining factor in you taking this job?
It was. It was really something that kind of put me over the edge on it. I've been here for a good while, and it was one of the first jobs I got, not the very first, but one of the first jobs I got out of college. And it was the determining factor. Like, pay was similar enough. I wasn't going to travel as far as I was at my previous job. Oh, and I get to go shoot stuff.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Yeah.
So is that actually part of the job description as well? Like, you have to go out and take care of a couple deer that are destroying some of these trees?
No, not a requirement, not part of the job description,
okay.
but it's something that we are allowed to do. And every one of these restoration projects has a plan in it. And within that, we say we will control herbivorous species, we will control invasive species. So it's something that we state in the plan that this is something people are allowed to go do.
Okay. And the company owns these wetlands then, right?
Yes.
Okay. So how does that work? Does the company then buy the land and then restore it and then mm-hmm. allow you to hunt it?
Yeah. So generally the way it goes, yeah, company buys the land. We plan this restoration project, and restoration is not just a, like, you do it and then it's over process. It's
right.
It's an ongoing thing. So you got to plant it out. You have to plant the trees. You have to go out and monitor it every year to show that the trees are growing, that you're successful. There's different criteria of a wetland. So it's not just the ground squishy and there's trees here. We have to go out and assess things every year, go check on the property multiple times a year. So it's an ongoing management. And just part of that management is being able to go control species that are going to cause damage to the project. So pigs tearing up the ground or deer tearing up our trees.
So how long does your company then own the property? Like, as long as they want? Or is owning the property part of the plan and then they turn the property over, or do they sell it back to the state, or how's that work?
There's a couple different options. There's properties that we've owned for a very long time. There's some properties that we're starting to sell off now, but we're still going to own the project that is on it until it's complete. So we have to monitor, manage it for 10, 15 years, whenever we can successfully tell the government that, hey, we have fully restored this. And then on top of that, there's a conservation easement on the property in perpetuity. So this property can never be developed. It's going to stay this restored wetland forever. And so at that point, we can sell it to someone else who just wants to utilize it as a recreational hunting property where they leave the habitat there and they use it. A lot of times sometimes we'll try to sell it back to the nonprofit, which is holding the conservation easement, and add it to their portfolio of their conserved lands. There's one major property that is still 30 years from being complete. It, again, very long term process of making sure everything's restored, but we're in talks of, like, maybe we can talk to the state and it can become a wildlife management area in the future or something mm-hmm. like that.
Interesting. So essentially your company is doing habitat improvement and you get a hunt on any one of these properties you want.
Yeah, no, that's a
badass job, dude. What a great, that's amazing.
It's something I didn't know existed until I got out of college. Yeah.
And now you know.
Yep.
That's cool. Oh, and that
And because you're an employee, I mean, are there a lot of other employees who hunt these properties, or are you kind of one of the only hunters?
In the area, I'm one of the only hunters down here. So I get a lot of unrestricted access just myself to go out and do stuff. But we own property all across the country. It's a nationwide company. Mm. So a lot of people hunt the properties closer to them. I have the opportunity to go hunt some other properties. I just got to make the trip out there, buy the other states' licenses, things like that.
Okay. What states?
Immediately adjacent to us is Louisiana. We got a couple properties over there that I've seen deer on while I was working. I just haven't I haven't committed to doing a project or to hunting out there. And then through work, I did this past year get permission on a property up in Indiana where I killed a nice buck. So that was a pretty cool gig.
Dude, do you have any properties in like Kansas or Iowa or Illinois that you know about that could potentially be a shortcut for you?
Not yet. Okay. We don't have any properties there, and I'm still trying to like look into the process of starting the draw and preference point system in these other trophy states too.
Okay.
Indiana was easy because it's just a like online kind of over the counter version of one buck.
Yeah. Well, what you need to do is apply for your project manager's job within your company, and then say, we need to expand to Kansas or we need to expand to Iowa or Illinois or Wisconsin and start doing habitat like restorations in those states. And then dude, from there, it's just, you start cycling through and you become a big buck killer. Like
that's the goal, man. Yeah. trying to get us up there. I'm trying to get more opportunities up north. So we're expanding into Oklahoma right now. That's going to be a cool one. Yeah. And trying to work towards these Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, all those states.
Yeah. So, okay. So outside of the company properties that you hunt, do you still go hunt leases with family or a crew of people?
I don't have any leases. It's just I have so much opportunity to land I don't have to pay for that I haven't taken that step in paying for other private. I do some public stuff. Texas has a interesting draw system for hunting certain WMAs or national wildlife refuges, things in here. So I have over the years been applying for that, gaining preference points. And I'm at the point where now I get about one hunt a year on some Texas Parks and Wildlife draw system. So this past year, I went to National Wildlife Refuge in South Texas, got a nice buck. There was also opportunity for Nilgai and other stuff down there. I just didn't get close enough for a shot on them. And then the year before, I went on a alligator hunt and I got a little alligator on that. So that was pretty slick.
Okay. So walk us through this draw system. So it's not like public land where I could just buy a Texas tag and show up. You have to apply for it in advance. Walk us through who's available for that. Is it only for Texas residents?
No, anyone can apply for the draw system down here. There is some public walk-in area, certain national forests, certain public hunt areas that you can just walk in. But those, like any other public, get crowded. There are specific categories. You pick your archery, deer, or gun, rifle, deer, pig, whatever, all these categories. And it's a $3 application to hunt a specific WMA or whatever site that you want to try for that year. If you don't get drawn on a specific category, so say you are applying for rifle, deer, and spike at five different properties and you don't get drawn, you still get a loyalty point or a preference point toward that entire category the next year.
Okay.
And your loyalty points get cubed year to year. So if you apply for three loyalty points, then you get 27 names in the hat for that drawing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So is this, because they're I don't know, because you have to apply for them versus regular Texas public land, does it seem to have better quality animals on them versus the regular Texas public?
Generally, yeah. If you read the forums, there's lots of conspiracy theorists out there that don't think it is. And there's some of the old time properties that have been hyped up over the years that people get drawn and say, oh, I didn't see anything. This is just a hype property. But then you'll see the Facebook posts from those WMAs where people are just getting monsters out of them year after year. So there's still some pretty cool properties that have really big deer out here.
Yeah. And that's awesome to hear, because when I hear Texas, I think hunt club, land lease, outfitters, high fence, like all of these things that for a Texan, it's normal, right? Mm-hmm. To hear all those buzzwords, because that's what you grew up doing. But when you hear that there are these other, even though it's an application process, these other opportunities out there, because this is the first time I've heard about this. Mm-hmm. I know guys hunt public in Texas, but I didn't know that there was all these other options for not just whitetail, but a variety of species outside of whitetail that you could just apply for.
Yep. Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, it's a really nice system. You know, we all wish that there was more public land, there was more opportunity available, and these do get, not hit hard. They get lots of applicants year after year. So it does get to a point where it's a little difficult to draw. There's some categories where I have 6 to 8 years of preference points and I'm still not getting drawn. But then there's others where I can consistently get drawn with 3. So it just depends on which category you're going for and how much effort you want to put in. A lot of people, crossbows are super legal down here. So a lot of people want to pick a archery hunt that they're going to get drawn for, show up with their crossbow, and then hunt right off the road. And if you do that, you're probably just going to get a doe or a spike, and you're not going to get a good monster deer. But if you wait long enough, or even on those where it's easier to get picked, if you're willing to go deep into the properties and get away from people, you're going to have a lot of opportunity to see some big animals, see lots of quantities of animals that other people aren't seeing.
Again, sounds like effort is the contributing factor to success. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So point creep is even an issue in some of these, like as more people find out about it, more people apply for them. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, there's a line.
Yep. Yeah. And it's on top of that too, it's the each property will accept a certain amount of hunters every year. So if you want to apply for a specific property in a specific category, that's going to require a certain amount of points to draw versus another property that's within the same category.
Gotcha.
So a lot of people want to do these legacy properties that are really hyped up over the years, and those can take so many points to draw. But then if you're willing to settle for a property that's a little less hyped, then you're a little more likely to get drawn for it.
Okay. Are crossbows and compound bows both under the archery category?
Yep. In Texas, okay. They are.
Okay. So I'm going to guess here, archery tags are harder to get than rifle tags or not?
Generally, archery tags for these draw hunts are a little bit easier to get because they expect a lower success rate, so they'll accept more hunters across a property.
Okay. All right. And then like the rest of Texas, you can bait or use feeders. Are people baiting on these hunts or not?
It's a per property, per hunt thing. And these hunts are generally for like 3 days to a week at a time. So you don't have time to go set up a feeder and do any long-term scouting. Gotcha. You don't get a whole year dedicated to this is your property to hunt. It's a specific hunt event.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So you necessarily can't go out on this property the week before and do a ton of scouting.
Yeah. Some of them have dedicated scouting periods for the hunts. So this South Texas National Wildlife Refuge hunt I did, the hunt is Thursday through Sunday, but you are allowed to scout Monday through Wednesday beforehand.
Okay. All right.
But others, it's show up and here's your compartment. Some of them, like the rifle hunts, it's even here's your blind that you have to sit in for 3 days.
Oh, okay. So they even offer the blind and exactly where you can or cannot go.
Yep. Yeah. It's, okay. Every property is a little bit different. The WMA manager gets to design how they want that to be done.
Okay. Okay. And so do you have to check in and check in the deer, check in the times? Like, are you allowed to run trail cameras? Is everything like documented?
Most everything is documented. I don't know if there's any properties you're allowed to run trail cameras on anymore, but most of it is check in, check out, either at a station or they have an e-check-in system that you need to do. And then some of them require you to check your deer in, others don't.
Yeah.
So, okay. But if they don't require you to check it in person, they're generally going to have you e-check in that you killed a deer you think was this age, this sex, on the property on this day.
Okay. Interesting. Love it. Well, that's cool, man. And then that gives people, whoever draws, a little bit more of an opportunity at a higher caliber animal, potentially. Yeah,
exactly. And they're trying to track all that. They don't publish the data in detail for you to look at, but next year you'll see if I want to hunt WMAA. Last year they accepted X amount of applicants. This many people applied. They chose 48 people to hunt it. The success rate was 37% or something like that. So I go a little Mark Kenyon and build all these spreadsheets and like track everything myself to try to figure out, oh, okay, this property was pretty successful last year. I think I want to apply for that one.
Gotcha. Okay. So you live in the greater Houston area. How far are you traveling to hunt?
For work properties, I travel up to an hour and a half in the greater Houston area. And then WMAs last year, I went to, it was 5 hours to get into South Texas where this National Wildlife Refuge was.
Okay. All right, cool. And so talk to us a little bit, like, first off, you told me Houston and I got to ask, have you ever met Paul Wall or Slim Thug?
No.
Or Mike Jones?
I know the Mike Jones song, but yeah. That's
but you've never met him. You never happened to run into him in Houston.
No. Never dialed his phone number, never ran into him that I know of.
Sorry, I had to do it. Just because I grew up on, Mike Jones and Paul Wall and all those guys. Okay, anyway. What's the difference? Because you said you got to, like, I always thought Houston was Southern Texas, but there's a whole bunch of other, Texas south of San Antonio and Houston. What's the difference in like topography, in climate from Houston down to South Texas? And does the ocean affect any of the temperatures down there or the weather?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd say South Texas starts about San Antonio area and goes down from there. Yep. Houston is kind of a coastal East Texas mix to an extent. And by coastal, it's not necessarily meaning saltwater, but you still feel the effects of being there on the Gulf, windy, high humidity, things like that. So, and getting into East Texas, you get the denser piney woods, lots of streams, rivers. So again, more humidity there, and it's all generally flat until you get into hill country West Texas, so northwest of San Antonio, or if you get about an hour north of Houston, you start getting into a little more rolling hill topography. So still not major mountains or anything, but a lot more undulating landscape up there.
Gotcha. And then so the further south you get, the flatter it gets?
Yeah, super, super flat.
Gotcha. Okay. And when you start getting down into South Texas, is that, because here's where several years ago, I flew into San Antonio for a media hunt that I was invited on. And you get outside. I don't know what direction we were going. I think it was west. Once we got into San Antonio and started driving west, it was just like high fence and what do they call those? It was high fence operations with deer, but also exotics, right?
Yeah.
Tons of different exotics. As you start to get south of San Antonio, is that the same thing? You're getting into a lot of high fence operations and exotic operations.
Yep. Lots of high fence, lots of exotics out there. So you can come to Texas and kill anything that you want down there if you're willing to pay for it.
Right.
For sure.
Right. And that's what, I mean, that's what this place we had, like animals that were, I don't even know, I don't think they were on an endangered species list, but they were very rare. And like, oh yeah, that one's, you know, $18,000. That one's $30,000. That one's $5,000. And if I wanted to and wanted to write the check, I could have killed whatever I wanted while I was down there.
Yep.
Wait, except whitetails. Because whitetails still had to obey the rules and regulations, even though they were in a high fence.
Yep, still have to obey the rules and regulations and all that. And then you have to follow the seasons there. But then a lot of bigger leases where they're like really trying to manage genetics, they're bringing in outside trophy deer to come in and breed with their does and stuff. Then they're going to start charging people by the inch of antler, starting at like $5,000 for 120-inch deer, and then another $500 for every like 10 inches of antler on top of that deer. Very like basic example, but
that's crazy. But it also sounds like there is some, is there public land down in those areas too, or is it just these draw hunts on these refuges?
Mostly draw hunts. There are a couple of walk-in areas down there. So Texas does a good job of, every year they publish their public hunting booklet that shows all of the public hunting across the state. There's lots of individual fields that are primarily dove hunting, and they do a lot of private land agreements with these landowners to allow people to come dove hunt out there. And that's pretty benign, shooting 12 gauge up in the air, as opposed to them worrying about having so many hunters out there with rifles at certain times of year.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. All right. And so what, so that's like the difference. So do you ever go north or northwest over by like, I don't know, Lubbock or up towards the Oklahoma border to hunt ever?
I haven't got to do any public hunting that far northwest yet. I'm applying for stuff every year. One of the properties my company manages is a little northeast of Dallas, right along the Red River, and there's a absolute ton of deer out there, ton of pigs. So got to shoot a lot of deer out there, do a lot of pig hunts, some under thermal, and those are just the most fun you can have with your pants on. Like it's just a blast. So yeah.
Oh dude, that's crazy. Okay. What else other than whitetails do we need to know about the state of Texas? I mean, obviously the hog situation there is shoot them whatever and however you want, as many as you want. I mean, I got friends that go down there every year and have a blast shooting them. Like you said, with the thermals and I know a guy who did a helicopter hunt, which was bananas. But outside of those two, what else are you doing throughout the year?
You know, whitetail and pigs are definitely the bread and butter I look forward to every year. I do love dove hunting. Always try and go opening day. I've got a family friend who I've hunted out there almost every opening day since I was like 16 with them.
For dove.
Yeah. So September 1st every year, it's been a priority to try to get out there and go shoot some dove. And so that's a lot of fun. This year, kind of sucked for ducks. I've listened to a couple of the Deep in the Hunt podcasts, and I think they've said the same thing. Like this past year wasn't great for ducks. It was just way too dry across most of the state. But there's portions of the state where we get a lot of ducks, a lot of geese. South along the coast where there's a lot of rice fields, lots of geese coming in there. And then those kind of more high plains prairie hunts where you got lots of prairie potholes and every property has old NRCS ponds. There's lots of ducks that are dropping in there. And there's some lakes closer to Houston where you do have the opportunity to do public duck hunting as well.
Okay. That's awesome. And then do you do any like coastal fishing or go out to the, you know, go out in the ocean and do fun things like that?
I get to do probably one or two inshore fishing trips a year, catch some redfish, catch some trout. So I'm not as good at that as I am at catching bass. And I have a little bass boat I love to take out every now and then. It's given me fits, as boats generally do right now. But yeah, there's lots of opportunity for freshwater out here, lots of crappie, lots of largemouth bass, lots of trophy bass in some of these waters too.
Gotcha. Cool. What else do we need to know about Texas, man?
Man.
Is Texas a place where I should, you know, like I come from Iowa and obviously I'm the guy who likes experiences, and that's why I like going to, you know, Colorado and Wyoming and Idaho and South Dakota and potentially some other, you know, Midwestern states to go hunt. But If I was to put together just like a hunt some year, what would you recommend I do and how would you recommend I do it?
If you're willing to take a few years to do it, I am a big advocate for Texas's public draw system. I've been doing these draw hunts since I was a kid. And especially if you have kids, they really try to prioritize getting kids out there on some of these WMAs. They'll accept a lot more child hunters youth hunters on these properties. And then there's some even where they'll be totally full and you can do a walk up and they'll accept a kid and just find somewhere to put them on some of these properties. If you're willing to wait a few years, the application is $3 per application of category and property. So if you want to go nuts, like I'll put in $200 a year applying to multiple properties and multiple categories. But if you're willing to spend $20 a year, spread out your application, there's some cool properties out here that you can get drawn on in 5 or so years. And I hate to say that. I don't want more people getting on my places I love hunting, but there's a great way to do it. Otherwise, there's lots of places that will just come let you shoot pigs for pay a $400 fee for a day, like a one night. So you get a morning and evening of hunting, and there's tons of pigs down here. You can hunt them however you want. If you want to set up in a river bottom in your saddle with a bow, you're going to have pigs come by. If you're willing to sit over corn, you're going to have pigs come by. If you want to pay a little bit extra and use someone's thermal and AR, you're going to have a blast doing it.
Yeah. That sounds like fun, dude. Some of the guys from the network go down to Texas every year, and I've always kind of said I don't have the time, but I look at what they're doing with the thermals and then how much fun they're having. And I think it would be an absolute blast to go and do that. And so maybe I just got to start making some time, because they always go, I can't remember when they go. Maybe it's springtime, or if it's not springtime, it's like maybe October, early October or something like that. And I don't think I'm going to coach football this year. So I might have a little extra free time this fall or next fall to go and do that. So lots of fun things to do in Texas. Now, other than like when I hear Texas, I think barbecue, I think brisket, I think cows. What's your go-to meal in Texas, especially from the Houston area?
Mm-hmm. I love Mexican food and seafood a lot.
Okay.
I have rules for both. I don't eat Mexican food in states that don't touch Mexico, and I don't eat seafood in states that don't touch the ocean. So,
Interesting.
yeah, so they're both really good in this area. If you just want like traditional fried seafood where it's like fried fish fillets, that's cool. That's a thing you can do, but the grilled redfish, flounder, stuff like that down here is fantastic. And then I'm a fiend for Mexican food. I love fajitas, I love tacos, I love carnitas, all of that.
All right. So I like that rule, but I'm an Iowa dude. So if I want a Mexican meal, I got to go to a Mexican restaurant, and they're all the same. But I'm not going to try to kid you. Every single Mexican restaurant in Iowa is the same. But I will say this: I'm going to see if I can find it. Where was I at? I was in California, and I'm trying to find the town that we were in. I gotta say it, because if I don't, okay, we went up through there and we went north for a day and we made it to, geez, where were we at? Anyway, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to find it, but what I'm getting at is I ate a fish taco that was caught. And the fish was caught that morning from the coast at a, and it was really it wasn't necessarily a restaurant. They made food there, but it was like a tackle. It had tackle for all the fishermen. It had bait. They sold bait there. They sold gas and things like that. And so it was a mix of like your independent fishermen and also your industrial, I guess you would call commercial fishermen there as well. And so, but we ended up going there, and dude, it was amazing. Like, it was the best fish taco I ever ate in my life. And it was so fresh, man. It was badass. It was badass.
If you can find a little restaurant that's overlooking a bay or overlooking the Gulf, and they're getting fresh oysters, fresh shrimp, fresh crab in every day. They're getting other fresh fish in. You can't beat it. It's one of my all-time favorite things.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, man, you kind of made me want to come visit Texas a little bit
Do it.
today,
Do it.
especially whether it's, whether it's for, I don't know, whether it's for the outdoors or even the food. You made me kind of want to go to Texas. So,
Good.
I appreciate you taking time out of your day today for a little Texas BS session. Thank you very much. If you guys enjoy the Nine Finger Chronicles, I highly encourage you to go leave a 5-star review. Subscribe to all the content that we're putting out. Make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook and in YouTube, all of those places where you can find all the Nine Finger Chronicles content. Good vibes, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Dan.